So tonight we're talking about the travels of a knight named Sir John Mandeville. When it comes to these first-hand eyewitness accounts, oftentimes I've found that modern academics, surprise, surprise, usually just cast them aside. They just say, oh, that's just a fantasy. They just wrote it like it was true, but it's just fiction. This is a true story. This is definitely real. And Sir John Mandeville, at the end of it, he says like, hey, I had this certified by like the king and the pope and everybody. So this is all, you know, this is all accurate. This, you'll see. Watch. You're going to meet monsters, legendary tribes of people, weird, strange, mutant humanoids, stuff that this guy wrote about in great detail. This is a huge book, so I've condensed it down. These are all the Jay's notes of the book. He says, in Ethiopia, in that country, be folk that have but one foot, and they go so bleavy that it is a marvel, meaning they move about quickly even though they only have one foot. And the foot is so large that it shadoweth all of the body against the sun when they will lie and rest them. So they'll lie down and put their foot up above them, blocking, using it as like a parasol. In end be full many diverse countries, and it is clept end. Clept just means called. It is clept end for a flom, or a river, that runneth throughout the country is called end. And that flom, men find eels of 30 foot long and more. And the folk that dwell nigh the water be of evil color, green and yellow. This reminds me of the shrieking eels from The Princess Bride. Remember that one? Those are the shrieking eels. They always grow louder right before they feed on human flesh. In that isle, isle means island. In that isle be ships without nails of iron or bonds, for the rocks of the adamants, for they be all full thereabout at the sea, that it is a marvel to speak of. And if a ship passed by those marches that had either iron bonds or iron nails, anon he should be perished, for the adamant of his kind draweth the iron to him. That means that the rocks themselves have magnetic properties that pull the ships that are just floating on water. They pull the iron and the nails and the magnetic stuff towards these lodestone mountains. And the ships, they just keep getting faster and faster and faster because it's just being pulled in, basically, right? And so it would draw him to the ship because of the iron, that he would never depart from it, no, never go thence. Right, so the people would get sucked into these lodestone mountains, you know, at the top of the world, and they knew not to make their ships with metal, or they would get stuck there. And there are many legends and writings and histories of people who have been stuck there. In that isle be many great lions and many other wild beasts, and there be rats in that isle as great as hounds here. And men take them with great mastiffs, for cats may not take them. Because back then the world was full of monsters. And this says there be rats in that island as great as hounds. Rats as big as dogs. Which also reminds me of The Princess Bride. The R-O-U-S's. This is a historic account, okay? This is not some gigantic fictional book that someone was trying to trick everyone in the future, you know? Listen, books were a big deal hundreds of years ago. The trolls they had were real, actual trolls, okay? They didn't have humans that were just screwing with each other. I think I'll take years to write, like, a travelogue book, hundreds of pages, and I'll just trick the world and make lots of money. They didn't have that. You would die. And whoso drinketh three times fasting of that water of the well, he is whole of all manner of sicknesses that he has. This is the well. This is the wishing well. And it is what I call the plasma volcano, Mount Meru, Rupus Nigra. It is the Fountain of Youth, which is physically a real, actual place, the Fountain of Youth. For they often drink thereof and seem always young-like and live without sickness. And men say that that well cometh out of paradise, and therefore it is also virtuous. Goes on to say, and ye have heard me say that Jerusalem is in the midst of the world. In the midst of the world. Okay, Jerusalem today is not in the middle of the world. But it's not in the middle of the world. It's like off to the side, you know, up there. It's definitely not in the middle. There's a true Jerusalem. There's a real Jerusalem. And that's not to take anything away from the modern city or whatever. I'm just saying, like, those people came from somewhere, which was a place called Jerusalem. And when they settled in the new land, the promised land or whatever, or the place they thought was the promised land, when they settled there, then they renamed it after the old land, which was the city of peace. There'd be also in that country a kind of snails that be so great that many persons may lodge them in their shells as men would do in a little house. Snail shells so big that humans of our stature can use them as shelter, like little houses, right? This sounds like something out of a fairy tale. The brilliant thing about it is that it's 100% real. They stem from a reality that we've just simply forgotten. We're not used to it. You know, we live in the modern world, as did they. When they told their stories sitting inside of their little snail houses or whatever, they told stories about how people would stare at crystals and see visions and be able to speak to one another the world across. That was their stories. We are their campfire stories. Other snails there be that be full great, but not so huge as the other. And of these snails and of the great white worms that have black heads that be as great as a man's thigh, and some less as great worms that men find there in the woods. So there's also giant worms too. And a lot of times these are sandworms. Not all of them. There's different kinds of worms and stuff. But when gigantism returns to this world, there are sandworms, just like you see in Beetlejuice, just like you see in Dune, just like you see in these, you know, Star Wars and stuff, like gigantic worms that live in muddy, swampy, marshy areas that will freaking eat you. And all the men and women of that isle have hounds' heads, and they be clept cynocephales. Now that's interesting. That is the land of werewolves, okay? I'm translating into modern language. Those are werewolves. Like, that's a damn werewolf. I don't care how, any way you slice it, that's a werewolf. They said there's an entire land full of humanoids that look like they have the head of a wolf. About these dog people, it says, they be full of reasonable and good understanding, save that they worship an ox for their god. So they're reasonable, they're understanding, they have a human-like mindset, so these are not just dogs that turn into people, you know, or animals or whatever. And they go all naked, save for a little clout that they cover with their knees and their members. They be great folk of well-fighting, and they have a great targe that covereth their body, and a spear in their hand to fight with. And if they take any man in battle, anon they eat him. These are the sworn travels, testimonies, okay? Of a knight, the Middle Ages, but everywhere he went, he wrote it all down, things that he witnessed. In one of these isles, be folk of great stature, as giants, and they be hideous for to look upon. And they have but one eye, and that is in the middle, in the front, and they eat nothing but raw flesh and raw fish. There's different types of giants as well, right? So just like there's different types of humans. Different races of humans, different races of giants and stuff. These ones seem to be of the cyclopean type. In another island, towards the south, dwell folk of foul stature and of cursed kind that have no heads. Their eyes be in their shoulders. This is a reference to the Blemmies that we have, you know, talked about on occasion as well. They're headless people. They look like they don't have heads. Whatever they are, they seem headless, okay? Like they don't have any heads at all. Like, imagine if my shoulders went up this high, you know what I mean? I'm going to share some more other types of travelogues like this. There's a really interesting Irish one, but it's the same type of thing. They go to all these different islands way, you know, beyond the edges of the world or whatever. And every single island is vastly different from every other island. So there's strange sounding. This sounds like, you know, something you would see in a horror movie, right? Where do you suppose the ideas for those horror movies come from? History. Real history. We just want to forget the old world. Why? Because it's right around the corner. That's the world that is about to creep up on you. And people don't want to lose all of their comforts of their modern world. In another island be folk that have great ears and long that hang down to their knees. Now, here's another thing I will point out. Okay, many of these legendary tribes typically are just humanoid, but there's some features that are different for some reason, and oftentimes they're elongated body parts. I have talked about how that may be possible for body parts after the apocalypse to stretch. You know, depends on how close you are to certain, you know, radioactive materials or radiation, cosmic radiation that comes down, and you know what I mean, how it affects you. But it has the potential to activate all of your collagen, your skin cells, basically, to regenerate them very quickly, but to make it so that the elastin in your skin makes your skin extremely stretchy. In another, I'll be folk that go upon their hands and their feet as beasts, and they be all skinned and feathered, and they will leap as lightly into the trees and from tree to tree as it were squirrels or apes. It kind of sounds like what they call skinwalkers today, actually. I don't know about the feathers, except for maybe they're humanoid, so they decorate with feathers or something. And in another aisle be folk that go always upon their knees full marvelously. And at every pace that they go, it seemeth that they would fall. And they have in every foot 8 toes. I think this is the people that have the backwards legs. The legends say that they're extremely fast. Like, you would think that since their legs look like they're all backwards, they would have a hard time walking. It actually makes it so they can run and jump incredibly further than we can, and faster than we can. Now, the pygmies. That river goeth through the land of the pygmies, where the folk be of little stature. That be but 3 spans long. And they be right fair and gentle, after their quantities, both the men and the women. And they marry them when they be 1/2 year of age, and they get children. And they live not but 6 year or 7 at the most. And he that liveth an 8th year, men hold him there being right passing old. These men be the best of workers of gold, silver, cotton, silk, and all such things of any other that be in the world. Much like the dwarves, like the story of the little people, they tend to be, you know, very good at metal workers. And they have oftentimes war with the birds of that country that they take and they eat. So if you don't know the legends, the pygmies were known oftentimes to go to war with storks and herons and storks and those types of birds, right? Stocky-legged birds. They're oftentimes shown riding them too. They subdued them. So it sounds to me like their war was them going on the hunt, you know, because these birds were very useful. They could fly on them. And this is probably, if I were to guess, the origin of babies being delivered by the stork. Oftentimes, they war with the birds of the country that they take and they eat. This little folk neither labor in lands nor in vines, but they have great men amongst them of our stature, that till the land and labor amongst the vines for them. And those men of our stature have they great scorn and wonder, as we would have as giants among us. Nimrod, the giant, that was the first king that ever was in the world, and he began the foundation of the Tower of Babylon. At that time, the fiends of hell, underworld beings, hollow earth creatures and entities and people, came many times and lay with the women of his generation and engendered on them diverse folk as monsters and folks disfigured, some without heads, some with great ears, some with one eye, some giants, some with horses' feet, and many other diverse shape against kind. There's different ways you could interpret this. One is physical, actual creatures from the underworld, like monsters that come up, or humanoids, or giants, or whatever. But another way to see this is it's describing terrestrial energy that's being released from the earth in particular areas at particular times, comes up, charges up, you know, the DNA of individuals, even impregnating virgins and women and stuff, and, you know, really kick-starting life. And you get a lot of, you know, strange results from that. And all the men of Tartary have the number 9 in great reverence. And therefore, who that will make the Chan any present, be it of horses or be it of birds or of arrows or bows or fruit or any other thing, always he must make of it the number 9. More benignly than though he were presented with 100 or 200. So to get something that was, you know, collected and put together in nines was seen as being a greater gift than something that was given in the 100. For him seemeth the number of 9 so holy, because the messenger of God immortal devised it. Think about the number 9 and how that, what letter that relates to or correlates to. in Phoenician or ancient Hebrew, right? And there groweth a manner of fruit as though it were gourds. And when they be ripe, men cut them in two, and men find within them a little beast in flesh, in bone, in blood, as though it were a little lamb without wool. And men eat both the fruit and the beast. And that is a great marvel. So there was some sort of gourd that looked like a fruit, possibly could be something else. But whatever it was, they cracked it open and there was some sort of delicious fruit on the inside and a creature. Of that fruit I have eaten, he says, although it were wonderful, but that I know well that God is marvelous in his works. In that country were long apples of good savor and have great long leaves and large, of 2 foot long and more. So leaves 2 feet long. And there be vines that bear so great grapes. Grapes so gigantic. Regular old grapes. That a strong man should have enough to do for to bear one cluster with all of the grapes. This is mentioned in the Bible. In the Old Testament, actually. So there's a story of the Hebrew people were looking for the promised land. The problem was that they heard that the promised land was full of giants. Anyways, they sent these two spies, Caleb and Joshua, into the land to spy it out, to see what was going on, how dangerous it might look, to prove that there was giant people walking around in that land, which was their story they brought back. They also brought back giant fruit. One of the things they brought back was a cluster of grapes that was so big, the Bible says, that two men had to carry it on a stick. Just to carry one cluster of grapes. In that country be hippotanes that dwell sometime in the water and sometime in the land. And they be half man and half horse, as I have said before. And they eat men when they may take them. Centaurs are not all known for being the wisest. Okay, I know they're shown like that in the movies all the time. But they were very wild. They had a wise leader, but you better be careful around the other centaurs. Now, in that country be many griffins, more plenty than in any other country. That's interesting. That he says, like, hey, there's griffins there, but it's not just that they have griffins, it's that they have way more griffins than the other countries of the world, which griffins were depicted on ancient maps. Some men say that they have the body upward as an eagle and beneath as a lion, but one griffin hath the body more great and is more strong than 8 lions, and such lions be of this half, and more great and stronger than 100 eagles, such as we have amongst us. For one griffin there will bear flying to his nest a great horse, if he may find him at the point, or 2 oxen yoked together as they go at the plough. For he hath as his talons are so long and so large and great upon his feet, as though they were horns of great oxen or bugles or of kine. So basically the griffins were so strong and so big that they could pluck up a couple of horses and take them up to their nests. They're not the only gigantic birds that are mentioned throughout ancient forgotten history. There's the roc. Remember the roc? Giant bird that was said to scoop down and pick up elephants, pulling them high up into the atmosphere and then dropping them so that the fall would kill them. Anyways, interesting that they just talk about griffins so passively, right? And a 3 journeys long from that sea be great mountains, out of which goeth a great flood that cometh out of paradise. And it is full of precious stones, without any drop of water, and it runneth throughout the desert on one side, so that it maketh the sea all gravelly. That central island that is no longer there was a valley with huge mountains, steep mountains, right, that are seen as being impassable because they shoot straight up out of the ground and they grow moss and they're all wet, so they're slippery, they're hard to climb, like it's difficult to get into this place, surrounded by just nature's walls. Also, beyond that Phlom, or river, more upward to the deserts is a great plain all gravelly between the mountains. And in that plain, every day at the sun rising, begin to grow small trees, and they grow until midday bearing fruit. But no man dare take of that fruit, for it is a thing of a fairy. And after midday they decrease, and they enter again into the earth, so that at the going down of the sun they appear no more. This they do every day. And it's a great marvel. Could be a plant, possibly, but it says it's a thing of a fairy. People don't want to touch the fruit of these quote-unquote trees because it's a thing of a fairy. There's many types of fairies, but the quintessential fairy is plasma, electricity, electrical phenomena that floats about and flutters and sparkles and stuff, and you don't want to touch it. So these trees, or electricity, comes up out of the ground during certain times, right, as it's following the currents of the earth, comes out, sprouts these little fruits or whatever, but people don't want to touch it because they will be electrocuted if they do. And then whenever the sun goes away, the circuit is broken and those electrical trees or vines or whatever you want to call them, they go back into the earth because that's where they come from, because the earth is electromagnetic in nature. In that desert be many wild men that be hideous to look upon, for they be horned, and they speak not, but they grunt as pigs. Many times I've shown you guys, humans do grow horns, okay? You live long enough, you're going to grow some horns, I promise. It's another part of puberty. It's a phase of puberty that we no longer go through because we don't live long enough to get to that stage of puberty. If you're an immortal, certain parts of your body just keep on growing, right? And that includes your skeleton and your skeletal structure. Horns, tails, all that fun stuff was a normal part of being a human in the ancient times, okay? In the forgotten times, in the legendary times. And he had also let make 3 wells, talking about Prester John's land, 3 wells, caves, basically, fair and noble, and all environed with stone of jasper, of crystal, gold, and set with precious stones and great orient pearls. And he had made a conduit under earth, so that the 3 wells, one should run milk, another wine, and another honey. And that place he called paradise. There's 3 conduits. There are 3 wells under paradise. 3 cavernous systems. An anode, a cathode, and a central well. These are the 3 roots, I believe, of Yggdrasil, which is said to have 3 roots that go down deep into the earth, that lead into the underworld. Beyond this valley is a great island, where the folk be great giants of 28 feet long, or 30 feet long. And they have no clothing but the skins of beasts that they hang upon them. And they eat no bread but all of raw flesh. And they drink milk of beasts, for they have plenty of all bestial. And they have no houses to lie in. And they eat more gladly men's flesh than any other flesh. Into that isle dare no man gladly enter. And if they see a ship and men therein, anon they enter into the sea for to take them. Man-eaters, right? They're huge, gigantic. These ones are up to 30 feet tall, but he goes into great detail of even taller ones. He's very good at letting you know if it's something he himself experienced or if it's just a story that he heard when he visits these strange lands. He says, I saw none of those, for I had no lust to go to those parts, because that no man cometh neither into that isle nor into the other, but if he be devoured. Meaning, if you want to go there, you're going to get eaten. So yeah, I don't want to go there. And amongst those giants be sheep as great as oxen, as the oxen are here. And they bear great wool and rough. Of the sheep I have seen many times. So he has seen these giant sheep. And men have seen many times those giants take men in the sea out of their ships and brought them to land, 2 in one hand and 2 another, eating them, going all raw and quick. There's a land of giants that will not hesitate to eat a person, scoop them up real quick. There be also many other beasts, full wicked and cruel, that be not mickle more than a bear, and they have a head like a boar or pig's head. They have 6 feet, and on every foot 2 large claws, trenchant. And the body is like a bear, and the tail is like a lion. So whatever these are phantasoids. Like, these are monstrous, weird creatures from other worlds, like a freaking giant tardigrade or something, I don't know. Now he goes on to say, beyond these isles, there's another isle that's Clept Pitan. The folk of that country, they eat no manner of thing. The people who live here don't eat. They be of good color and of fair shape after their greatness, but they be as small as dwarves, though not so little as the pygmies. I like how it differentiates. These men live by the smell of wild apples, and when they go any far away, they take the apples with them, for if they had lost the smell of these apples, they would die. They would starve to death because they're smell eaters. Now, Paradise Terrestrial, as wise men say, is the highest place of the earth that is in all of the world. Now, the highest place on the world is the top of the world, which is the North Pole. And it is so high that it toucheth near to the circle of the moon. For she is so high that the flood of Noah might not come to her, that would have covered all of the earth and the world all about and above and beneath, save paradise only alone. And this paradise is enclosed all about with a wall. That's the cliffs of insanity, right? And men wit not, that means they know not, whereof it is. They don't know where it is. They lost it. Paradise is lost. We went through an electromagnetic shift, so they couldn't use compasses to figure out which way was east or west or whatever anymore. All of the star patterns changed. The direction of the lights that moved in the sky, everything was changed, and the earth was completely terraformed. So people were quite actually lost. For the walls be covered all over with moss. So you can imagine how hard it would be to scale walls that are just covered in slime, right? And the wall stretcheth from the south to the north, and it hath but not but one entry that is closed with fire. So there's one entry into paradise, into the Garden of Eden, that is closed up. One place that you can get past those cliffs of insanity. One port, you could say. That's the Garden of Eden. And in the most high place of paradise, even in the middle place, is a well that casteth out the four floods that run by diverse lands. This is the Garden of Eden. Of the which, the first is clept Pishon, or Ganges. That is all one, and it runneth around the land of Ind. In this river be many precious stones, and much of lignum, aloes, and much gravel of gold. And the other river is clept Nilus, or Gishon, that goeth by Ethiopia after by Egypt. And the other is clept Tigris, that runneth by Assyria and Armenia the Great. And the other is clept Euphrates, that runneth also by Media and Armenia and by Persia. And men there beyond say that all the sweet waters of the world, above and beneath, take their beginning of the well of paradise. And out of that well, all of the waters come and go. It describes paradise and where paradise is. Paradise is not in the Middle East. I know there's two rivers that share these same names, but those were renamed. Those rivers were renamed after these original, basically, right? The people who settled that area came from an original land, and they lived between two rivers. And so when they settled between two rivers, they renamed it according to their original homeland. Goes on about these rivers. The first river is clept Pishon. That is to say, in their language, assembly. For many other rivers meet them there, and they go into that river. And some men call it Ganges, or Ganges. The second river is clept Nilus, the Nile, basically, or Gishon, or it was always trouble. And Gishon, in the language of Ethiopia, is to say trouble, and in the language of Egypt also means trouble. Troubled waters. The third river is called Tigris. And this is because it is fast running, like a tiger. For he runneth more fast than any of the others. There is also a beast that is called the Tigris that is fast running. The fourth river is called the Euphrates, that is to say, well-bearing. For there grow many goods upon that river, as corns, fruits, and other goods as plenty. Now I believe that the Euphrates is split into seven different heads, as the Bible says. And if that's so, it would be a nice little delta, you know, marshy land, not fast running water or anything, that you would expect there to be lots of food growing aplenty, right? And ye shall understand that no man that is mortal may approach to that paradise. By land no man may go, for wild beasts that be in the deserts, and for the high mountains, and great huge rocks that no man may pass by, for the dark places that be there, and that many. And by the rivers may no man go, for the water runneth so rudely and so sharply, because that it cometh down so outrageously from the high places above it, that it runneth in so great waves that no ship may row against it or sail against it. And the water roareth so, and maketh so huge noise and so great of a tempest, that no man may hear other in the ship, though he cried with all of the craft that he could in the highest voice that he might. He goes on to say, many great lords have assayed with great will many times for to pass by those rivers towards paradise. So many people have tried to go there with full great companies, but they might not speed in their voyage. And many died for weariness of rowing against these strong waves, and many of them became blind and many deaf for the noise of the water. And some were perished and lost within the waves, so that no mortal man may approach to that place without special grace of God.